We all agree on the facts. There's no disputing of the facts. The only question is applying the law to the facts. That's what a summary judgment is. Okay? Summary judgment does not exist in common law, except in the case of contempt of court right in front of the court. If it happens right before the court, you know, like somebody insults the judge or something like that, that happens, then there's summary judgment because the court has all the facts. See, summary judgment is nothing more than applying to the law to facts that everybody agrees on. If there's any dispute of the facts, you cannot have a summary judgment. Everybody agrees on these facts, they apply the law. All right, so summary judgment occurs in equity proceedings. However, in common law, you can't have a summary judgment. But you have something that's very close to a summary judgment. What you do, you have the accuser. You have the answer. You have the reply to the answer. You have the response to the reply. And so it goes narrowed down, and at some point, somebody does either a demur or, what's that form again? I never can remember.
At issue
memorandum, okay? If it's an at issue memorandum, the next step is obvious. You go to trial. But if it's a demur, the demur says, I agree to all those facts, and now we just apply the law and all the paperwork that filed before. It's like a series of motions in a sense. Okay? Now, when you get to the end of that, either demur or at issue memorandum, either way, the next step is the judgment. No trial. Okay? No trial. Just the judgment when you're at law. At law is very efficient. All right? You don't need a trial. Why? The reason is because the trial was held already. It's on paper. Pardon? Or even where there's a dispute. It's all on paper. You were having the trial when you filed your paperwork, going back and forth, your arguments. That was the trial. Okay? When you're at law. And so the only thing left is judgment. Okay? And if they do an at issue memorandum or if they do a demur, that's what you do, the judgment. Okay? Yes. There's more.
I wanted to ask you about a slap motion.
Let's get it closer.
I wanted to ask you about a slap motion.
Oh, a slide motion?
No, it's called a slap motion.
Oh, slap motion.
The first attorney on this particular thing that I'm being attacked on filed a slap motion.
Do a counterclaim.
And a demur. And the judge got really pissed off because it's supposed to be filed against corporations, not in reference to a person.
Right, because persons have rights and corporations don't.
Right. And so the judge, because of the motion... Okay.
Stop. Time out for tape change.
The judge, because he said that the attorney filed the wrong motion, slapped me with a sanction of $5,000.
Then what you have to do is you basically have to... are you the plaintiff?
No, I'm the defendant.
Oh, you should have done a counterclaim, make yourself the plaintiff, challenge the jurisdiction, and now you're in charge.
Okay. Well, I need to do that now.
Well, it's a good time, I guess. Not to be sarcastic or anything, but yeah, you've got to be on top of it. You've got to respond. And yes, that's called for a counterclaim. And the issue is jurisdiction, and it's your court. Okay, that's the key. Got to make it your court. You're the sovereign of the court. And then if they do anything, see, that judge is only a judge in their court. But once you challenge jurisdiction, everything's supposed to stop, and the burden of proof is on them to prove their jurisdiction, to prove that they suffered an injury. Okay? And you're sitting in judgment deciding whether or not they have jurisdiction. Now, again, don't take that lightly. I mean, put on a good show. Make sure, you know, I've told you all about that.
I try to do that from day one. It's like, okay, no, trying to claim this, that, and the other. What are the damages?
Look, you got. Do you have a pencil in front of you? All right, set it on the table. Okay, you got it on the table? All right, now I want you to demonstrate to all of us how you, quote, try to pick up the pencil. Don't pick it up, just try to. I want to see a demonstration of trying. I want you to try. I want to show me how you try to pick up a pencil.
How I try?
So, yeah, I don't want you to actually pick it up. Just
right,
try
okay,
to pick it up,
try.
Okay?
Hey, Bill, I'm
no.
All right,
I'll see you.
I'm expecting sure.
Yep, yeah, see you then. You see, trying is a phony word, in my opinion. Okay? You either do it or you don't. These guys are going to mess with you, and you've got to mess back. And the best way to do it is with a counterclaim based on jurisdiction. Because there's plenty of case law, you just do a little research, you'll find it. There's plenty of case law that says once jurisdiction is challenged, they must prove their jurisdiction before they can take another step forward.
Yeah, prove it on the record.
Okay. Should you also try to move to a superior court if it's an immunity court for a criminal? If you have a criminal suit by a city against you and you do the counterclaim, should you also try to move it from muni court to federal court or to federal
I think
or
it could
superior?
If your counterclaim is more than $25,000 or whatever their limits are, then they lose jurisdiction. They have to transfer.
But this is criminal, not civil.
I know, but you've connected the two cases, see? It's a counterclaim. Now, the problem you run into is that you're going to try and file a counterclaim and they're going to say, oh, well, you have to go down to civil and file it. But they're actually wrong. But, nevertheless, the ignorance is so pervasive through there, it might be just as well. You go down to civil, you still call it in your body, you still make it a counterclaim, and then you start, you know, making motions or orders, issuing orders out of your court to the other court. Or what you can do, here's another trick, is you can move for consolidation of cases. Okay? Because why? You have similar parties, you have similar issues. So it calls, if you look up the criteria for consolidation of cases, you'll see that justifies the consolidation.
Well, I just put in a claim to the city for what they've been doing up until now with violations, which I plan to sue for in federal court. So should I do the consolidation there then?
No, consolidation means you've got several cases and you bring them together into a master case, which is your case, of course. Your court. You'll sit in adjudication of all the cases. Okay. Now, I have another thing I wanted to bring up, and that is vindictive prosecution. I had no papers on here. Okay. Whenever you have a city that has some sort of errant personnel in it, that where they're using the system in order to carry out some sort of vendetta, which has been known to happen.
Oh, shit.
When you raise the issue of vindictive prosecution, there we go. Shift positions here. Whenever you raise the issue of vindictive prosecution, the burden of proof automatically shifts to them. They have to prove, not just claim, they have to prove that they're not being vindictive. And that proof, it has to be, because after all, you're making a counterclaim, right? You raise that issue of vindictive prosecution as well as jurisdiction. They have to make the proof, and guess who sits in judgment? Right. Now remember, one of your key arguments is that the people do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. Now, I want to point out, which I've done many times before, I guess. All right, we have here, we have an example. And on this example, we have this case. Now, this case is the one in which we found the judge in contempt of court and fined him $1. Okay? And $1. Yeah, he couldn't pay it. I guess he was poor. And, but we found him in contempt of court. Now, understand that the purpose of contempt of court is twofold. Huh? I suppose so. But the thing is, there's two purposes of contempt. The first one is to preserve the dignity of the court. The other is to preserve the authority of the court, like enforcing court orders and that sort of stuff. When we found him in contempt of court, because he was challenging our authority, the presiding judge removed him from our case and 900 other cases and assigned him to Timbuktu somewhere else in the county, handling only criminal. He no longer could handle civil. So he never paid the
We need to stand here.
Okay.
Too much pride.
All right. We need to. He didn't pay that fine, but then you see when he was removed from the scene, it was no longer necessary to enforce the fine, because after all, he was no longer in contempt. See, that's why we never pushed it to collect from him. But the point was made. And it's very interesting to read the transcript, how he spoke after he had been found in contempt and realized he'd been found on contempt. This real interesting reading. Whole different attitude on his part. Okay? So, but that's what contempt is. And this court also has, or this case here also has all the logic that's necessary. If you go down to the ruling, all right, this is a ruling on contempt, all right? And then here it is, a little more. We'll go down to the ruling on that. This ruling is the one where we found him in contempt of court. It's also the same ruling in which we found the clerk not in contempt, even though she was accused earlier. But what I'm pointing out to you is we have judicial cognizance. Now, what's the difference between judicial cognizance and judicial notice? Well, in judicial notice, you basically, the court with a judicial notice notices things that are of such high quality that they do not have to be proven in evidence. For example, you can take judicial notice of the statutes, the Constitution. You can take judicial notice of official records. It doesn't mean they can't be impeached, but as long as nobody impeaches it, you know, they're accepted at face value. So, a judicial notice, basically, when the tribunal is evaluating for a final decision, taking judicial notice of something means you kind of put it into the cause, and you kind of decide, does this apply or not apply, and you see how it fits with the picture. Okay, judicial cognizance is a notch up above judicial notice. In judicial cognizance, it is mandatory that the judges apply that particular law or that particular thing that's being judicially cognized. I guess I made up a word. Okay? And he has no choice. If he's passing judgment on something, he must apply that thing you're taking judicial cognizance of. Can't ignore it. Other things, if he makes a decision and that decision goes contrary to something that was judicially noticed, he simply says, well, I evaluated it and it didn't apply. But if it's judicial cognizance, he can't ignore it. It must apply. All right?
How would you word that?
Huh?
How would you word that?
Well, read this example. It's in there. It's right there. The court takes judicial cognizance and decrees as follows. Whatever. Yes?
Do you file this or whatever after a decision from the court that you don't think he's...
No, this paper is the court itself speaking. This is a decision.
Well, this is not the court of record.
Yeah, it's court of record, but the court's making a decision. The action's over. It's now a decision. This is the paper that was filed.
Well, then you filed.
This is the actual decision. Right. Let's take it to the top. Right there. Ruling regarding motion for contempt. One of the parties made a motion for contempt. He says, this guy's in contempt. Here's the reason why. The judge, or not the judge, but the court. Right, the person in suit of the sovereign. The court said, you're right, he's in contempt, and here's our ruling. So you got a summary. It's written in a style very similar to what the Supreme Court does when it writes rulings. You know, you tell the story. What happened? Why are we here? How did we come up, our reasoning process, where we came to a conclusion, all right? So this ruling has everything you need to know about why it is you outrank the judge. It has all the information. You should study this. This is a real complete picture. This one ruling tells the whole story. And you know, when we started this case, We never expected to have this jewel show up. We made it, we created it, but we created it out of the situation. We've issued orders many times, never had them challenged. This time the guy issued a second order. First judge to issue a second order. But the second time he knew better. So now he's in contempt. First time we gave him a free ticket. We just issued an order vacating his order. But the second time he knew better, so we found him in contempt. Because he was in contempt of our court.
When you were in court, you had to take time to research and come up with this.
Well, of course. Okay. Yeah, it's not easy. Freedom's not free.
So you can actually tell him the next hearing will be in 30 days, such and such, or whatever.
Well, whatever, but the thing
is, our court is going to convene here in 30 days of such a day, such and such time.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, we made it real easy. We scheduled the hearing for the next conference. In other words, they had set a date, so we made it the same date, so everybody would be in the courtroom, whether they liked it or not. Okay? They thought they were there on judge's order, they were actually there on our orders, but we don't quibble. So, but the thing is that this is a motion for contempt and a ruling on it.
Yeah.
Now, I gotta entertain you with something here. This judge had repeatedly, and we had it in transcripts, we had it, you know, lots of examples. He repeatedly tried to invoke California rules of court, California statutes, okay? And this is that law. So the only law that exists in this court is the law that's decreed by the sovereign. But he was insisting on California rules all the time. Here's what we did. I'm still in the judicial cognizance section. Okay, here it is. You'll love this. Listen to this one carefully because this is entertaining. So anyway, in this instant question, the magistrate unduly chose to personally bypass all procedure, direct the court deputy clerk to reject the First Amended action, and then sign the accompanying pre-printed order without proper hearing or notice to any of the affected parties. That exceeds the jurisdiction of a magistrate who only possesses ministerial authority separate from the authority of the independent tribunal of a court of record. On more than one occasion, the magistrate has indicated his preference for California rules. So be it for his cause. This court, for purposes of accommodating the accused's choice of law, adopts the California Code of Civil Procedure as it relates to contempt of court. Let there be no doubt as to the justness of this proceeding for the accused. How do you like that? What happened? What happened was the court, didn't I tell you got to put on a good show? How better could you improve a show than by accusing somebody, determining what law system he prefers, granting that wish, and then convicting him on his own choice of law? How could you be more fair than that? Right? That's what we did. We suspended the entire common law system by sovereign prerogative, okay? Brought in another legal system, totally independent. This is your choice, man. So, then quoted all the statutes and codes and whatever, convicted him, then throw that out and bring the common law back in. Well, sovereign prerogative, right? That's what we did to him. This is what makes this case such, this particular thing, this contempt, such a jewel. Because what we're showing here, if you study this, you are going to see the full flexibility of a common law court and the full flexibility of sovereign authority. Okay? You've got it. And they respected it. We never had a kickback on it. Okay? As a matter of fact, what happened was when this guy left, they brought in a new judge. Well, he seemed like an ordinary guy. You know, of course, that's what he's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
All right? But we researched him. Now, you can go down to the library and you can get what's called a judicial profile. They keep a book, loose leaf binder typically, and in it they have one, two, or three sheets that is a background report on the judge. All judges have it. So you look at the judicial profile. They tell about, you know, like he's married or single, how many kids, his history, where he graduated from, and what his hobbies are, interests, and so forth. So you kind of get a picture of who it is you're dealing with. And let me assure you, they don't say anything negative about these guys. Okay, it's all positive. They're wonderful creatures for society. Well, we looked up this guy, the new guy. We found out that he was a specialist in common law. In fact, he loved common law so much that he was a member of a judges group that all they do is study common law. They love it. So they brought in their top gun. Okay? And he just pretended he assumed this case and the other 900 cases, you know, just taking care of business. Then we also found out that at one time he was the presiding judge of the Superior Court Appellate Department, which is usually your sharper guys. Okay? So they really did bring in their top gun to handle this one. They felt desperate. They felt desperate enough to pull out this guy and bring in the other. Now, there was one little problem that they had with that. And that's this. Who's boss? Right? They're in my house. I'm not in their house. First of all, I'm one of the people. I own the outfit. All right? One of the owners. Secondly, it's my court. I set the conditions. When I came in, I decreed right up front. I didn't call it a decree, but what I said is that I am so-and-so, one of the people of California, right, that establishes sovereignty, and in this court of record, blah, blah, blah. Nobody objected. That means they agreed, didn't they? Well, once they agreed to the forum, they can't change the forum. They brought the new judge in. This new judge had no more authority than any other judge. Here's an example of a judicial profile he just brought in. Okay? Has a nice picture of the judge. Talks about, let's see, when this lady talks to law students at her alma mater, she gives a lot of advice on taking the bar exam. She offers the tips at the Whittier College School of Law, not only as a municipal court commissioner, but as a co-owner of a testing service that offers a bar review course. And they go on and they tell all the good things. And here they have three pages. They have a biography, comments on trial court procedures. Do you render tentative rulings in law and motion matters? No. Are you willing to resolve disputes that arise during depositions over the telephone? No. And so you get the policies and styles. So yeah, this is an example. A commissioner. See? Yes.
Could you talk up, please?
Just talk louder.
Okay. I actually had the attorney of record that substituted himself out tell me one of the ways that he got me to be his client was he said, I know the judge.
Mm-hmm.
I used to practice tenant landlord with him, and he's not too bright. And I was like, what kind of a thing is that?
Well, it's the usual thing. You know, that's how it works. I had a friend that was going through law school, eventually became an attorney, associated with a firm, was handling cases. He got into this one courtroom, and he had this criminal case, something like that, and these guys were going through ahead of him, you know, and he saw, and he was getting a feel for about what the judge would do. And then when his client came along, the sentence was like 4 or 5 times as long. He said, wow, what happened? You know? I mean, he wasn't lasting expecting because he just had a, you know, his case wasn't any different than the other cases. Well, he found out that what happened was that the law firm that he was associated with, one of the partners had run in an election against that judge. All right? And as soon as he found that out, he disassociated himself from that law firm, went to a different law firm, and things got back to normal. Okay? Yeah, that happens. That's politics. And he later became a commissioner in the LA court system. I thought, hey, this is great. I'm going to go talk to him. He's really a nice guy, actually. He didn't know beans about law. Hey, geez, I gave up on him. Yeah.
Where or how do you find out if an attorney is practicing?
like a profile on attorneys? Can you?
Well, I don't know of any, but you know, Martindale Hubbell says, okay, that they have some profiles, yeah. And that's a set of books that are about this high, this wide, about yay thick, several volumes, heavy, good for exercise.
Right.
And yeah, law library, all libraries have them, right. So check that out. But, you know, it's tough. All right, so we got any other questions?
What did she ask about how you can check an attorney?
Yeah.
Go on the internet.
Yeah, it's another way.
Sometimes they have them on.
I'll tell you.
Fire Association.
But yeah. They put all these things.
Right. Well, here's what I did one time to check out an attorney. Because he was an attorney that had some experience, had been around, and had involved in a few cases that got onto appeal. And so I checked him out by looking at the appeal, going to the Court of Appeals website, because they're having that sort of thing now. And I looked for the attorney's name, and up popped every case that he'd been on. And then I read the cases and what the arguments were. And then I got a feel for why he lost all those cases. Okay? But that's what you do. So, you know, it's seek and you shall find again.
Yeah.
But, okay, so.
But ask and you shall find faster.
Well, of course, if you can find somebody to do your work for you, that's great.
That was
good. So, okay, what's next? I'm kind of in the question and answer period. We're winding down.
Any references for what?
For
wonderful researchers that can look at
people, you mean?
Yeah.
Who you can go to for research?
Look at the case and find every item that's not done.
You are your own best researcher. All right? You're your own best researcher. And nobody's as interested in your case as you are. All right? And yes, you can do research, you can hire somebody, but it's never the same quality. And remember, it's expensive. You want to hire somebody, I mean, a good researcher is worth $75 an hour or $100 an hour. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you've got the money, great. You know, but...
When's your next talk?
I don't know. I haven't planned one yet. What would you like to hear about on the next talk? Hopefully you got your money's worth this time.
Well, when we left for dinner, I don't know if we covered it actually, but we were going to you were going to speak on general motions and orders.
Oh yeah, did I drop the ball on that? Yeah, let's go back. That was again Matthews. Okay, and all right, we go to law notes, and then we go to procedure, and then we go up to motion example, and then we go to, no, I guess it isn't that, is it? No, it's back here on, here we go, it's on reference law books, I believe. Matthew Bender here, forms of pleading and practice, okay? And then we were going to talk about general motions and orders generally, okay? Here we go again. I guess I'm going to have to work on this, huh? Let's see, this is motions and orders. Well, I sure put this together in a hurry, but we can get to it. We just eliminate that specific file that it's looking for, hit enter, that gives us the general directory. And now we have motions and orders right here. I think this is it. So, all right. So now this is really the same organization as before when we went in limine, motions in limine, okay? This is just it. But this is a general discussion of motions. And keeping in mind what I told you about the organization of motions, keep that in mind as you look through this. It tells you here, this chapter includes forms of notice of motion, supporting declaration, written statement of oral evidence sought to be introduced at the hearing, separate notice of intent to appear by telephone, orders on a motion. So these are different things that are within the scope of this chapter.